A late-night street fight left one man dead, and contradictory accounts of what took place. Some said the victim was murdered. Others said it was self-defense. It took a member of the Wrestling Hall of Fame, a blood spatter expert, and forensic animation to reveal how a world-class athlete lost one of the most important fights of his life. San Diego, California is a mecca for both athletes and outdoor enthusiasts. And it's where 25-year-old Dusty Harless settled after his successful college career as the AAU National Wrestling Champion. Dusty was a wakeboard salesman, which combined his passion for sports with his personality for sales.
He had so many friends. He knew so many different groups of people all over San Diego, and everyone loved him. He was just a great person. Like, if he touched your life, you were a lucky person.
And here's Dusty's fat stomach.
There's Dusty's stomach. Tomorrow he'll sit on the can for an hour.
Oh, no.
Run 5 miles, come back, do a couple of 100 push-ups.
Just after midnight one Saturday night, Dusty and his girlfriend, Skye Flanders, were heading home after an evening on the town.
We were just going to walk to the liquor store to call a cab.
Skye ran ahead of Dusty, seeking shelter from the rain. A man in a car pulled up beside her.
He said something to the effect, hey, baby, you want to ride?
And I said, no, I'm with someone. Like, obviously, I don't need a ride because I'm not alone. He hadn't seen Dusty right away.
Dusty walked over to investigate.
He made a statement to the effect of, hey, that's my girlfriend. You know, what's going on here?
Dusty went around to the driver's side. Words were exchanged. There was an altercation. By the time it was all over, the car sped away, leaving Dusty lying on the ground, bleeding to death.
I didn't know there was a weapon involved until then. And, obviously, when I saw the wound, things, you know, started coming together. I was hysterical. Why did you do this to Dusty?
When paramedics arrived, Dusty had bled to death.
It was in total disbelief. I didn't want to hear what he was telling me. I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to hear it. I was like, you're lying to me. And I was hitting the wall and freaking out, and he had to take me outside. I was being way too loud.
Skye was able to provide the assailant's license plate number, 2UCA167. The car was registered to Barbara Gensler. She told police her son David was using the car, but she didn't know where he was. 25-year-old David Gensler was a finance student at San Diego State University. He matched the general description Skye had given to police, about 6 feet tall, thin, with glasses. 3 days later, Gensler turned himself in.
Obviously, he knew he stabbed someone, but didn't know the extent of that wound. When he learned that this person had died, that's when he contacted an attorney.
Gensler refused to tell police where the car was, and he also refused to give them the clothes he wore that night and the knife.
What his story is, I don't know. He's never given us a statement.
Gensler looked very studious. He had the little glasses and was a tall, lanky guy that he didn't look like someone you would expect to get into a street brawl, much less kill someone.
But several eyewitnesses disagreed. hundreds of friends turned out for Dusty Harless's funeral. He was a former wrestling champion and a world-class wakeboarder. His friends went out into the Pacific near his home and dropped wreaths of flowers on the water in his memory.
He knew so many people in San Diego, different groups of people in different areas, and he had a lot of friends, like a lot of people loved him. If you knew Dusty, you were touched and you were lucky.
The autopsy revealed the cause of Dusty's death was a single stab wound to his aorta, the largest artery in the body.
Just one stab wound, and it went in 4 inches into the body and sliced the aorta.
Dusty's girlfriend, Sky Flanders, didn't see everything that happened, but she was certain David Gensler was a killer.
He looked kind of crazed. He looked like a wild animal, really. He had like a crazy look in his eyes and got in his car and left. So, yeah, he didn't say anything.
Eventually, an eyewitness came forward. His name was Scott Davis. He said he was driving by and saw two men fighting and stopped to try to break it up.
Scott Davis was a first-class petty officer with the Navy who was moonlighting as a bouncer at a local bar. And he drove up just as this was beginning. And what he said is as he drove up, he saw this beginning of a confrontation, and he saw the defendant take a hard swing and hit Dusty on the left side of his head, and that Dusty went down on his back, that the defendant jumped on top of him, straddled him, pulled out a knife with his right hand, and stabbed him once in the chest.
Davis said he fled the scene because Gensler had threatened him too. But David Gensler's version of events was significantly different. He said Dusty Harless instigated the fight by pulling him out of his car and wrestled him face down to the ground. He also said that Scott Davis, the so-called witness, was in fact an active participant. Gensler insisted Davis kicked him repeatedly while Dusty had him pinned down, but he managed to get a knife out of his pocket to defend himself.
He's thinking he's getting his ass kicked and he's in fear of his life, and he just blindly reaches back and stabs him. Is it likely or unlikely? I really can't say.
And that is what made the one stab wound into the pretty much the center of the chest of Dusty.
A week after Dusty's death, police found Gensler's car parked in a neighborhood on the other side of the city.
We were able to get DNA from the steering wheel, from the gear shift, from the turn signal, and that DNA, that blood, came back and matched that of the victim, Dusty Harless.
This tied Gensler to the killing. A short time later, after hearing about the incident in the media, one of Gensler's friends turned over a knife which she said belonged to Gensler.
It was consistent with the size of the wound. It was basically a 4-inch single-bladed knife, and it was consistent with the depth of the wound and other dimensions of the wound.
And the friend also turned over a bloody shirt. Tests revealed the blood on the shirt was that of the victim, Dusty Harless. The blood was on the front of the shirt, inconsistent with Gensler's version of the incident. Had Gensler been underneath Dusty on his stomach when he stabbed him, Dusty's blood would have been on the back of Gensler's shirt, not the front.
The fact that the majority of the blood is the front, it seems a more likely theory that it was a front, face-to-face confrontation.
Based on the facts of the case, based on the eyewitnesses, based on the periphery witnesses after the fact, I felt we had a murder case here.
I couldn't believe that I actually took another man's life. I only thought I got the guy in the shoulder. I didn't know he was gonna die.
David Gensler was convicted of second-degree murder in the death of Dusty Harless. He was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison.
which in California means life. And people don't get parole when they have indeterminate sentences like that.
While in prison, Gensler continued to maintain he had acted in self-defense, and he hoped that one day he would get a second chance to prove his innocence. David Gensler couldn't understand how a jury concluded he beat a national wrestling champion, then stabbed him in the chest without provocation. Gensler appealed his conviction, arguing he was denied his choice of counsel.
The defendant's initial attorney, Jerry Blank, was ruled not to be able to represent him because of some technical issues. The Court of Appeals said that that denied Mr. Gensler his right to the counsel of his choice and reversed it on that ground.
In preparing for the second trial, Gensler's new defense team found something in Dusty Hollis's background that made Gensler's claim of self-defense more believable. Numerous witnesses came forward to say Dusty Hollis had a reputation for starting fights.
They brought some people in that said my son was a street brawler. I don't know how they found him, but they did find some people that weren't really in, you know, a Dusty fan.
In addition, toxicology tests showed Dusty was legally intoxicated at the time of his death with a 0.12 blood alcohol level. There were also traces of marijuana in his system. And the defense team discovered that Sky Flanders originally gave police a completely different version of events from what she testified to at trial.
So he said at one point Dusty had him on the ground?
Yeah, and I think that's when he stabbed him. Dusty went to him left.
Sky Flanders is interesting. She told police a few hours later that she saw Dusty in some kind of a wrestling hold, holding Gensler and throwing him. But then she didn't see a lot else until she saw him bleeding. Later, she changed that story on the stand in the first trial and testified that it was Gensler who was the complete aggressor coming out after him.
Sky also admitted that Dusty instigated more than his share of fights.
Sky Flanders did admit that she had committed perjury, that she had in fact seen Dusty Hollis in one brawl that she had witnessed after she had been insulted in a bar. He'd taken the guy out and beaten him bad down in the alley. And that she had heard about several other fights where he was always pretty much the winner, and he was a good fighter, apparently.
It was now coming out that I had not been completely truthful in my original testimonies. And the reason I had said that is because I didn't want to feed the defense any information that they would use against Dusty in the case.
From the beginning, David Gensler described in specific detail how Dusty held him to the ground. To see if this was possible, the defense consulted Ned Blass, a two-time national collegiate wrestling champion and member of the Wrestling Hall of Fame. Blass said that Gensler's description was consistent with a classic technique every wrestler is taught.
And I'm taking the position of Mr. Gensler, Mr. Harless over here, and I'm probably not wanting to fight, so I back up, he would attack my arm, turn me up. I want to go to my face because I don't want to land on the back of my head. Drives my head down and keeps me positioned. I can't get up. He pulls my head back. I realize I have a knife in my belt. I'm taking the knife out. Plenty of room to take it loose and stab wherever I can stab.
Prosecutors scoffed at this notion, as did Dusty's family.
David Gensler would have us believe that he was laying face down on the ground and Dusty was sitting on his back, and that David Gensler actually stabbed Dusty like this up over the back of his head and stabbed him in the chest while he was sitting on his back. I mean, there's just so many things that don't wash here.
But if Gensler was telling the truth, why was the blood all over the front of his shirt and not the back? David Gensler spent 6 years in prison for the murder of wrestler Dusty Hollis, but he eagerly awaited his new trial. His hopes were raised when Dusty's girlfriend, Skye Flanders, changed her story and now admitted that Dusty had been in several previous fights with others while they were out. As both sides prepared for the second trial, they each had very different explanations for how Dusty's blood got onto Gensler's shirt.
We have a blood spatter interpretation expert look at it from our crime lab. The defense hires a blood spatter interpretation expert to look at it from their end. And not surprising at all, their opinions are diametrically opposed.
The shirt had a large stain on the right front shoulder. Since Dusty's aorta had been severed, both defense and prosecution experts agreed the blood would have been spurting from the wound in the same cadence as his heartbeat.
You now have a victim that is bleeding and spurting with the maximum blood output that could be under stress. 20 to 30 liters of blood per minute are going to be coming out of this wound, either in the body or spurting out of the body.
This meant that the blood flow wasn't continuous.
With an aortic wound, blood doesn't generally spill out. It spurts out or sprays out because of the pressure under the aorta.
Defense experts believe this would have given Gensler enough time to rotate his torso to face Dusty as the blood spurted from the wound. But Gensler's attorney had to find some way to show the jury how this could have happened. And for that, he turned to the new field of forensic animation.
Forensic animation has a specific application within the court system, and those animations have to be conformed to the rules of the court and what are expected in terms of rules of evidence.
There's a videotape made with David Gensler, and I think it was the attorney who played the role of Dusty Harless. And we videotaped that from an angle that we were going to do the animation from, so I could use as reference to create the animation and create the poses to get as accurate as possible.
The computer takes several of these key frames and then calculates the most likely way the bodies would move from one key position to another.
It's called pose-to-pose animation, which was developed in the 30s by Disney, where they would make a pose and then you draw the next major pose and then you fill in between later.
A layer called a texture map was then created to show the movement of the blood to Gensler's shirt.
We wanted the eye to focus on this almost in a clinical frame of mind rather than an emotional frame of mind.
A frame-by-frame sequence was created corroborating Gensler's story by showing how the blood got on his shirt. In August of 2000, 6 years after Dusty Harless's death, David Gensler went on trial a second time for murder. The defense presented a much different account of the incident than the prosecution did. The defense said Gensler innocently offered Skye Flanders a ride because he thought she was alone. And the toxicology reports prove Dusty Harless was intoxicated. Gensler said Dusty pulled him out of the car and in short order pinned him to the ground. And that the witness, Scott Davis, helped Dusty by kicking Gensler while he was pinned. Gensler says the fight was two against one, and that he pulled the knife from his pocket, stabbed blindly behind him, and quickly turned around so that the blood hit the front of his shirt. Scott Davis admitted leaving the scene of the incident, but strongly denies attacking Gensler. This interpretation of the forensic evidence, the forensic animation, and testimony of a Hall of Fame wrestling coach resulted in a very different conclusion. David Gensler was found guilty of the much lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter. His sentence was reduced to time served, and he was released from prison.
His life could have been ruined. Now he's a free man. I don't know what he's doing now, but I understand he wanted to become a lawyer.
The case shows the limits of what answers science can provide. Questions about exactly what happened the night of Dusty Hollis's death remain.
Most likely, the main reason why there was more forensic evidence in the second trial is because there was literally years in between to prepare and to really go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and to present all evidence that you possibly could.
I've learned that in a fight, in a physical fight, things don't go always according to plan. The guy who's supposed to win the fight ends up losing. Anything can happen, and I think that's what happened in this case.
Exactly what happened, I don't think anybody will really know, except possibly the defendant.